The Syrian summit in Sochi that was recently held in Russia was deemed such a success that it was hailed by the UN and even the opposition that was absent, who stated that it would build upon its success to hopefully arrive at a political solution. But then comes an old story of broken record. Chemical weapons incidents, alleged incidents, in an area run by the so-called militants and terrorists, which the U.S. and its allies blame the Syrian government and Russia. In this debate, we will ask, why does this repeated scenario in the form of chemical weapons show its ugly face when there's success on the political side for Syria? First, let's go to Syria's capital, Damascus, and talk to our correspondent, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali, if you can, give us give us an update of the reaction that the Syrian government has had on what happened and transpired at the UN, accusing mainly from the U.S. that it was Assad's forces responsible for this, along with Russia bearing responsibility.
Yes, the Syrian government always rejects such allegations by the West and the United States. The recent and most official reaction was last Sunday, when the Syrian Foreign Ministry issued a statement rejecting and condemning what it described as false allegations made by the United States on the Syrian government's use of chemical weapons in eastern Al-Ghouta near Damascus, saying that such U.S. allegations come following the failure of the United States in having the UN adopt any resolution against the Syrian government. Also, the foreign ministry said that such U.S. and Western allegations come in order to protect the terrorist groups on the ground, and at a time that the Syrian government is advancing the Syrian army against the terrorist groups on the ground in various parts of the country. So the Syrian government is trying to say that every time there is success on the ground by the Syrian army in fighting terrorism, and success on the political arena internationally, we see such allegations and false accusations to the Syrian government. Also, the Syrian government back in 2014, gave up all of its chemical arsenal, and this was approved by the OPCW. In addition to that, many experts ask, why would the Syrian government use chemical weapons against terrorist groups on the ground when the regular weapons can do the job? This is a question that always is raised always by whether officials or even experts here in Syria. So in general, it makes no sense, according to many experts, to accuse the Syrian government of using chemical weapons at a time it is trying to reach a political solution for the unrest.
Thank you for that, Muhammad Ali. That's a correspondent there from Damascus. Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman, joins us from Washington, D.C. We have professor at George Washington University, Nabil Mikhail, who also joins us from Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, welcome. Nabil Mikhail, let me start with you. Here we go again on a very serious matter. Not to undermine the severity of how serious the matter is, but it's happened again with the reports of bombs allegedly containing chlorine gas being used against civilians in the so-called rebel-held area of Ghouta, where terrorists are running around. The Syrian government denies using chemical weapons. Why do you think that this scenario happens, first of all, with the U.S. alleging the Syrian government forces and ultimately Russia to bear responsibility?
Greeting to you and to the guest and to the audience. Look, when you claim the use of chemical weapons, you have to provide evidence. So I have not heard any statement by the Pentagon, the United States Department of Defense, that basically substantiate the use of chemical weapons. Chemical weapons are prohibited internationally. Syria had a stockpile that it surrendered under international supervision. But there was another round of that encounter when Al-Shuaifat air base was hit. I believe it was in April 2017. And the time lapse was from August, September 2013 till 2017. So the frequency of the use of chemical weapons could be not that quick. So on the debate on chemical weapons use now, in 2018, America has to provide an evidence. Also, you have to realize that, unlike Obama, who tried to say that withholding force was a demonstration of the enunciation of a presidential doctrine, as he told the Atlantic Monthly magazine, the Trump administration will not do that type of propaganda. If there is a plan by the Pentagon and it's approved by Trump, he will hit parts of Syria. But the question now is one of strategy. When we hit Syria in early phases of its civil war, Russia was not that entrenched in Syria, and the Syrian army was still fighting ISIL. But now the equilibrium has shifted toward Russia and the central government of Damascus. So one has to question what is the utility of an attack against the bases of the Syrian army. It could be a punitive act, but the question is, will it tilt the balance toward the opposition? After many gains by the Assad regime and Russia, I doubt if it would thwart their advances. And this also is reflected against the backdrop of the Turkish actions in northern Syria. So there could be a punishment, although the details of it have not been debated widely in Washington, D.C. Uh-huh. But at the same time, in question of a strategy, I do not think that it would deter Russia much in its actions in Syria.
Well, very well. Michael Springman, our guest star, Navid Mikhail, laid the groundwork there, made my job a little bit easier in terms of the fact that the U.S. does not have a proof, and therefore, given the gains that Russia and the Syrian army have made against the Daesh terrorists, practically cleaning Syria out from them, that this attack would not make sense for them to execute. But yet the U.S. has found it important enough and urgent enough to convene a session of the U.N. Security Council against smearing the Assad government forces and Russia, where Tillerson said Russia bore ultimate responsibility. What gains or advantages does this have for the U.S. to do this in the form called the U.N.?
Well, it distracts people's attention from the Turkish invasion of Syria and its fighting of American-supported Kurdish groups in the country. It distracts from the shooting down of the Russian aircraft over a de-escalation zone with presumably American-made anti-aircraft missile. And it distracts from the fact that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was most recently in the occupied Golan Heights, Syrian territory, ranting and raving about Iranian and Russian and other people's influences in Syria and how he wanted it to stop. So when you start raving about chemical weapons, which most people recoil at in horror, you don't have to provide proof, you don't have to provide rationality, you just simply have to make the statement, and people grab onto it and say, oh my God, this is terrible, anybody using these horrible weapons is subhuman and a monster, and we have to get rid of him. And that's what Nikki Haley and Donald Trump seemed destined to do. They're trying to get rid of the legitimate government of Syria and replace it with one of their choosing. And the American government has stated repeatedly it is not withdrawing its soldiers from Syria. So I think it's a nasty combination. And your Muhammad Ali in Damascus and Professor Mikhail pretty much have the right of it. And going on to the United Nations is just another propaganda campaign that has worldwide repercussions because people listen to what's said in the Security Council and what the United Nations does. So Trump and Haley, who apparently think she is president of the United States, believe that they're on the right track and all they have to do is huff and puff and they'll blow the house down.
Navid Mikhail, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has said Russia, I'm quoting him, ultimately bears responsibility for the victims in Isin Ghouta and countless other Syrians targeted with chemical weapons since Russia became involved in Syria. Why does he not come out and say there's a possibility that terrorists might be involved?
Good question. It has to do, as I told you in my first reply to you, to the evidence gathered and substantiated. So if it proves that terrorists use chemical weapons, and we have had incidents where Daesh or ISIL did use chemical weapons, so the evidence should be declared without any doubt. So the verification may take some time. But since you mentioned Russia, that invites a debate. In the case of a U.S. strike against Syrian forces, what kind of reaction will Russia do? Of course, it could reinforce the atmosphere of a renewed Cold War, but also still I'm hoping for peace. it could also convince the Russians and the Americans that the Syrian tragedy is bigger than a tit-a-tat skirmish between two superpowers. Their actions in Syria better. So the tragedy of Syria and American Russian squabbling over it is that it renewed two extremes and two opposite directions. That could be reconciled. There is the animosity that could be intensified as a result of America alleging that Syria used chemical weapons under the auspices of Moscow. And there could be also the message that the White House could send to the Kremlin that there is also a need for Moscow to be more independent, more thoughtful, more cognizant of the interests of Western powers, and try to combine this with its involvement in Syria and see how they can work together to stop the civil war, to bring back the refugees, to talk to the regional powers involved, to discuss the future and the reconstruction of Syria. So the brinkmanship also could be the gateway to some reconciliation. But so far, that message has not been forthcoming from Washington at this moment.
What kind of political efforts has Washington, Michael Springman, put into the Syrian crisis? I mean, the last thing that has happened was Sochi in Russia, and that was claimed to be a success. And that is not just what the Russian president and Turkish president has said. The UN actually came out and said, we're going to build upon that constitutional agreement that was made at Sochi. And also the opposition that was absent is going to build on that. Of course, they wanted to be under UN auspices. So here then we have this chemical weapons scenario playing out again. Some are deducting that this chemical weapons scenario is presented at this time to thwart the efforts on the political side, like what has happened in Sochi. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think you make a good argument for that. Chemical weapons are seen as being horrible things, even though they're not very practical. If it's raining, if it's the wind blowing the wrong way, if it's too hot or if it's too cold, the weapons simply don't work and may well blow back upon the side using them if the wind is wrong. So it's really a way of sabotaging any kind of political progress, any kind of political sensibility, any kind of political rapprochement between the various sides. So it's basically an effort to distract, to confuse, to befuddle the rest of the world, and to give the impression that the United States is really interested in the well-being of the Syrian people, whose government, political and economic infrastructure it has destroyed over many long years. So I don't think that the Americans really have any interest in any kind of peaceful resolution of the conflict. If they were, they would say, okay, let's get all of the foreign forces out of Syria and let the Syrians rebuild their country with monetary compensation from the countries that helped destroy the country. But that's too much rationality for the American government to use, unfortunately.
Well, if they believe in the UN enough there, Nabil Michael, to have this session to present their chemical weapons case against Syria, then they should listen to the UN Special Envoy, de Mistura, about Sochi, what he said, that clearly the conference statement handed back control of the Constitution Committee to the UN, both in terms of its composition, selection criteria, mandate, and terms of reference. And that's not so bad. That's a success, based on many people's accounts of what de Mistura has said. But yet the U.S. does not entertain that. Why do you think the U.S. is not interested in wanting a solution to the crisis, even if it's one that leads to a possible solution?
It's a good question, and I think Trump is different than the rest of the people around him when it comes to Syria, and I will dare and say it. He came to office wanting to end the civil war in Syria with a degree of collaboration with Russia. But I do not like to use the word the deep state, the administrative state, the bureaucratized interests in the State Department and the Department of Defense, and also in the intelligence community, I see, are hampering and backpedaling that effort a little bit. So my advice to Mr. Trump is to organize a good NSC process, a good National Security Council process, with all the oral briefings, the paperworks, and outline the declaratory history of the conflict, what has transpired inside Syria since he took over a year ago, and make some strategic options. Because to end the conflict in Syria, you have to rely first on the Europeans and the Russians, since they have enough power and influence to end the conflict. It became a wider, the conflict in Syria became a wider regional war. So it will not end just as a result of Arab diplomacy. You have to have an outside power collaborating with the United States dedicated to end the conflict in Syria. And so far, the proposals stemming from the Department of Defense and the State Department have not really garnered enough strategic vision to end the conflict boldly and courageously.
Well, based on what I'm looking at over here, Michael Springman, which came out back in, I can tell you even the exact date because I'm looking at the headline. This was in June of 2017, that Donald Trump has a hands-off approach, which has given the U.S. free military reign, handing over control like the Middle East region to its generals, based on what I'm reading here from one of the major publications. So it's not so much, you think, Trump dictating the terms as perhaps the generals are in the region. But then comes the allegations, of which many say are hard facts, that the U.S. is actually behind these terrorists that they call these freedom fighters or rebels. You know, they had that program that failed, only produced five. Then they announced this 30 or 40,000 force they want in Syria, of which I think either Tillerson announced it and the White House rejected it, or vice versa, because they're not on the same page. So it brings the question, does the U.S. want to maintain a hold in Syrian soil and therefore will come up with a scenario like the chemical weapons story?
Oh, yes, indeed. You're entirely correct. The United States does not want to leave Syria. It wants to control the internal policies of the country and to install a government of its choosing and impose it on the Syrian people. And it will use any means possible. In my book, Visas for Al-Qaeda, CIA Handouts That Wrecked the World, I have a chapter on Syria, and it discusses in great detail American involvement with recruiting and using and training and supporting terrorist groups in Syria to overthrow the legitimate government. So Trump, I think, is basically under the complete control of the Zionists, the militarists, and the neocons. He claimed to have a hands-off policy towards Syria, yet on the advice of his daughter, who had watched a movie by the extremist group, the White Helmets, which operates only in terrorist-controlled areas, he fired 59 Tomahawk missiles at Syria. So that's not hands-off, that's hands-on, and we're going to destroy the country no matter what. It's a shame, it's a tragedy, and the American people don't realize what's going on. They believe the lies put out by the mainstream media. They believe the lies put out by the Trump administration. And they don't look behind the scenes to see what exactly is happening. And the United States is working hand in glove with terrorists from all over the world operating in Syria with the support of Israel, which provides medical assistance and special forces operations inside Syria, along with the Saudi government, which is financing a lot of this stuff. So it's a disaster, and it destroyed Syria, and in our lifetime, it will never come back.
Well, I saved the best for last, Nabil Mikhail, and that has to deal with the way that Israel is exerting itself on Syria. It is said by some accounts 100 airstrikes have happened since this war has broken out on Syria by Israel. At the same time, you have the U.S., in which the Pentagon, just a couple months at most, said, you know what, we're going to stay in Syria indefinitely. Do you think that U.S. is in Syria to overlook and have watch on what is going on between Syria, Russia, and Iran on that territory based on Israel's insistence?
America is in Syria to counter Iran. This is what we heard officially. But you cannot do this without a reference to Russia. So it becomes really a strategic triangle. Russia, Israel, and the United States. But again, the question is, what kind of message Moscow will convey to the Israelis and the Americans? Well, because also I do not think there is a total unity of interest between Israel and America when it comes to Syria. Because suppose, say, America decided to leave Syria. Israel would say, we need assurances. So I think here, in this situation, on the Syria question, America has to realize soon that Russia has gained strategically in a significant way, and they may be calling the shots. And we have to talk to the Russians about it. Otherwise, it will be basically an endless cycle of America getting in, unable to finish the mission, and then there are renewed interest by many people, and the goal is not in sight.
Talk about many people. 30 seconds to you, Michael Springman, and then comes Turkey.
Well, exactly. The Turks want a piece of Syria, I think, if nothing else, Latakia. But they seem to be wanting to recreate the Ottoman Empire, and Syria was an integral part of it at the time. I don't think the Turks are going to leave, despite what they claim, that they're only in there to bat down the various Kurdish groups, which they claim to be terrorists. I think they're to stay for as long as they possibly can, and to take as much territory as they possibly can away from Syria. So Syria basically is now the sick man of Europe, not Turkey. And that the Americans, for all their huffing and puffing about Turkish threats to their soldiers in Syria, I think are quite happy to have another force in there that's a Muslim force, that's a regional force, and that cannot be claimed to be part of the West.
Right.
So I think this is going to continue, and to the Syrians' great dismay and tragedy.
Thank you for that. We're going to end it there. Former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman from Washington, D.C., and also from Washington, D.C., Professor George Washington University, Nabil Mikhail. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Tawai, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.
There could be an urge for them to coordinate